Hi, this is Adam Shartoff, your host of Film Wax Radio. We just launched our first ever Kickstarter campaign. Please visit Kickstarter and search Film Wax, and it's called Film Wax Radio 2.0 because I'm ramping things up with the podcast and all the different aspects of what Film Wax is trying to achieve. Be part of that. Check us out. Contribute. Share. Check out the pitch video. Check out the campaign description. Check out the rewards. We have some wonderful ones. And get involved. It's much appreciated. I love you guys. I really love doing the podcast. I want to continue doing it and only grow and bring on even more wonderful guests and be able to do the kind of show that you guys deserve. Again, go to Kickstarter and search Film Wax and check us out. Thank you very much. And now, on with this episode.
You're listening to Film Wax Radio, hosted by Adam Shartoff.
Hey, everybody. Adam Shartoff, host of Film Wax Radio. Let's see. This episode is number 443, and the guest on this episode is the one and only Sheila Nevins, the president of HBO Documentary Films. Her Wikipedia page says she has produced over 1,000 documentary films. I mean, this is, without a doubt, the most prolific producer or executive producer in many cases of than anyone else. She's involved in so many documentaries that it's pretty astounding. She grew up with very few means in Manhattan, and now she has plenty of means. She's a delight. She's unfiltered. She's entertaining. She's straightforward. She's complex. One thing that happened, it was kind of challenging because she's got so much going on. I went up there to her private office on the Upper East Side of Manhattan a couple of months ago, and shortly after I got there, an appointment that she had later that morning was canceled. So she gave me really her entire morning. We ended up having lunch together. So the recorder went off for that, and then also there was a lot just she was willing to share off the record. And so that meant the mic was off. And then at points, she kind of just strays away from the mic to take a call or to just because she gets distracted. So you'll see sometimes it's hard to hear her at a few spaces. But and I tried to fix it as best as this untalented engineer could. But anyhow, but primarily what brought me up to her office, Sheila was just feted at DocNYC, and DocNYC is still happening. So it made sense to time it with that. But she has a new book. It's called You Don't Look Your Age and Other Fairy Tales, and it is being published by Flatiron Books. It also comes, by the way, in a wonderful audiobook, and you can get it on CDs as well, which I do, and they have all of these amazing famous people, mostly, who are contributing their voices to the various different chapters. I mean, I'm just going to read you a few names, because it would be insane. You have here, let's see, reading Kathy Bates, Gloria Vanderbilt, Alan Alda, Marlo Thomas, Rosie O'Donnell, Ellen Burstyn, and Martha Stewart. Just amazing. Many, many more people, famous people. Whoopi Goldberg. Just tons of people are on this. Now, so just to give you, I don't know if it came out or not, but it just at one point when I was sitting there, she gets a call because she's going to see her friend, Ellen Burstyn, the actor, who was in a play at the time in New York. And after she gets off, she goes, I'm going to see Ellen, who contributed to the audiobook as well. And I said, oh, I love, you'll hear it. You'll hear it. And I said, oh, I love Ellen Burstyn. She goes, hold on a sec. She gets back on the phone and gets me a ticket. And so that Saturday evening, the three of us, are me and her husband, went to see Ellen Burstyn in this play. And then afterwards, I got to hang out and meet Ellen for a little while. And it was wonderful. What an exciting experience. So that's Sheila Nevins for you. So she's a very, very remarkable person. And so I'm very excited to have her on the podcast. Let's go into this conversation now because it is a long one. But stick with it because it pays off. It's a lot of fun. And then there won't be any outro on this episode. But we'll be back in a couple of days with a brand new episode. We have two episodes coming up next week. So do check in for that. And thank you for listening, everybody. Check out the Kickstarter once again. Remember, go to kickstarter.com and then search FilmWax. And you can also, by the way, check out all of the every day I'm posting a live video on my personal page. So you can go to Adam Shartoff on Facebook and check that out. I'm trying to do one every evening, and you can keep up. I talk about the rewards and the different things going on within. I'm trying to do it in different venues and places. I think I'm going to do my live video tonight from the Spectacle Theater in Williamsburg. So I'm trying to get around and do that. Okay, I must run. Thank you very much. Here it is, Sheila Nevins on FilmWax Radio. Just recently
drinking
on the
water.
Hot tech. Who was recently live on a mic? Was it? It was a
Jinx. The Jinx.
Well, that's right. That's the most infamous. Yes, Durst was a Jinx. Perfect, because you produced it.
Yeah.
And then our senator, Schumer.
Oh right.
He was.
Right.
He was on a
live. No, I say everything all the time. Except maybe one or two things.
Oh, you're talking about.
I don't mind going to the bathroom with my mic.
But you have a whole chapter of your book, not to jump ahead too much, because we're just kind of getting to know each other, about the foot in the mouth syndrome. Which
that's me. That's me. You want to watch?
See, yoga has its
advantages, not at this age. Nothing works at a certain. No, I do put my foot in the mouth, but I've earned the right to put my foot in the mouth.
How bad?
I used to put my foot in my mouth and lose my job. Now I can. I'm still careful.
This is good. Hold it up here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
hold it tight.
I'm going to put this on, actually, but hold it just up on the handle. Don't touch the bottom part.
Oh, here.
Because
I'm so sorry.
This is crap equipment. So okay. I'm actually doing my first Kickstarter ever, which, you know.
Exciting.
I'm excited, and Kickstarter is they're on board, and
what's it for?
Everybody's on board. Everybody. I've been doing this for years, and, you know, I don't charge anything. I get sponsors, but I don't.
Yeah.
So finally, I gotta get walk around with this, and also I want to have a real studio. That's part of it, big
What's
part of
call?
It. Which
the one you're getting from Kickstarter?
Oh no, it's like FilmWax. It's my show, FilmWax Radio. Oh. So it's like just 2.0 kind of thing. Like let's really make it into a real thing. And I need help. You know, I need to expand
financial
what I'm doing.
Help.
Yeah, and it's
How
also an opportunity.
How popular are you? How popular are you now?
Well, let's put it this way. As far as in general, I mean, you haven't heard of me, so I've still ways to go, obviously. But I'd say modestly.
Honey, I haven't heard of a lot of him.
No, me too. No, but I'm like, you know, I mean, most of your filmmakers know me. Most of your filmmakers that you work with,
I know.
They
so
all know what I do, and they most of them have been on the show.
Right.
At one time or other. But I also.
But how many people listen to your show?
In the thousands, of course, but
that's
but,
good.
But, no, it's good. It's just that
so
they,
you
want to
open a big FilmWax company.
I want to make it. I do a lot of over the years talking to people in the industry and talking to filmmakers and people like yourself who, luminaries, as I will refer. You don't like that. Well, you know they say, and this is bullshit, of course, but they say is compliment three times and then ask a question. Somebody said that to me the other day, and I'm like, that's such a load of
bull.
And then I was like, well, actually.
Well, it depends
could work.
Whether the compliment is meant.
Yes, right. Yeah. But now, you know I mean it.
I believe you
can
you
tell
do,
already.
But I don't feel it. But the thing is that it's not a bad rule if you believe it. If you don't believe it, it's a tough rule because then you're lying.
Yeah. And then most people can see through it anyway.
No,
but,
not theater
but there's,
people.
But,
not phony people. They can't see through artifice.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, it's true. It probably works. And I hate to generalize, but it probably works more effectively in the Hollywood sphere.
The higher the echelon.
Yeah.
The higher the dream that you're super god.
But in this case, and I know you're deflecting too much praise, however I can say it, I mean, obviously you're definitely part of the conduit of getting all these great documentaries. Well, first of all, getting these great documentaries in front of a larger audience. And
I
also,
think that's probably true.
Good. And also, so this is where my compliments are. And also that you are part of the few people that really were there to make a documentary into a popular movie format, you know, which it wasn't until about 30 years ago.
Yeah, but that's partly because I like regular people. Mm-hmm. And I think that everybody has a story. Not everybody, but almost everybody has. I don't believe in the elite. I'm not an elitist. I have no reason to be an elitist. Maybe I could be one day, but I don't think I could be an elitist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yesterday I had a cab driver who paid all this money for his medallion, and he couldn't. I went to a funeral yesterday. I went to Jeffrey Tuchman, who was a filmmaker. He died of pancreatic cancer like 10 weeks after he was diagnosed. And it was really hard to, I couldn't get an Uber, I couldn't do anything. So I like walked to Central Park, and there was a taxi, and I got into the taxi. And he told me he paid $375,000 for his medallion, and he makes no money now.
And also, as a additional salt in the wound, medallions have now come down an enormous amount because of that very same
Lyft,
reason. Right.
And there's, you know, Uber, somebody, and there's...
at least half a dozen others.
Via, and...
now Juno, there's...
Q-Train, and the thing
Q-Train.
Is, I felt badly for him.
Yeah.
I actually felt that this man was beaten by the congestion in New York, which I think every New Yorker is beaten by all as well.
Well, it's like you invest all your money, your savings in the stock market, and then, you know, everything crashes. It's the same
thing. Yeah, but if you invest
things,
in the stock market, chances are you had money to begin with. If you invest in a medallion, you're a working class American, and you expect to drive a cab, and they take that away from you. I think it's brutal politics.
Yeah.
Anyway. That's why I'm not an elitist. Did you like my book?
I did.
You read my book.
I read it cover to cover in one sitting.
You did?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's
because you were going to interview me or because you read the book? A little of both.
A little of both. I mean, first of all, I love when the... Well, I've always been a very big reader. Look who's interviewing whom. I've always been a big reader, but in the last, since I've had a kid, I have a 13-year-old, but since then, and trying to work and make a living, boy named Jacob, and since then, you know, it's been a juggling, of course, time and everything, and my book reading has dwindled down, so I read probably still more than the average person, but when I started doing the podcast, I'm going to bring on authors, you know, also, so, you know, mostly about books in the film world.
Right.
Or media, because that's kind of where I am and what people listen to me for. So I find books that are being written by people who, you know, I'm interested in, or books about things I'm interested in, and I bring them on. So I bring as many authors as I can on, and it forces me to read. I mean, it keeps me reading, and I do always
read. Yeah, but we got to make you rich, Adam. We got to make you rich.
Thank you. Thank you.
You got to get your kid to private school.
Well, I have mixed feelings. He wasn't. Well, first of all, one of the reasons I'm broke at the moment, because I had money. No, I'm saying is it's all. I don't mind being broke if I'm spending the money on my son. I don't have a problem. I'd rather not be broke. Don't get me wrong. I want to, and I don't plan on remaining that way. But 3 years he was in the private school. He was at a Waldorf school, and it was a disaster. We're kind of at odds. I'm at odds a little bit with it. But now he's back in this wonderful public school.
Oh, goody.
Which is a new school, and he loves it, and he's doing much better.
Good.
It's in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's a new, they opened this new school with a very young and progressive faculty near Park Slope. It's in a section called Kensington, which is right near the park. And, you know, we're excited about it, but he was in year one. Like, it was a brand new building. So even the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure was brand new. So it's up, you know, to date. So this is his last year in this school, 3 years now. He's been in this school. So he's graduating from middle school this year, and he'll be the first class to leave the school, too.
And where will he go?
That's what we're figuring out now. So he was at a high school fair this weekend, a citywide kind of high school fair. So we're figuring out. He's, of course, his mother's an actress. His dad is a artsy type, too, obviously. So he's been making films, and he's interested in... So he may have a film for HBO documentaries one of these days. You never know.
Oh God. What's his name?
Jacob.
Oh, you told me.
Yeah, yeah.
Jacob.
He's beautiful. And one of the other reasons I know
where
you're.
Where does your wife act? I'm much more interested
Broadway.
In you than what's she in?
Well, she just finished a play at Lincoln Center called Pipeline, which got great notices. She was the lead.
Excellent.
Yeah. And everybody loved it. Tom Powers thinks he discovered her. And he was tweeting, and she goes, "Do you know Tom Powers, my ex-wife?" I'm sorry, I didn't explain my ex-wife, but we're still very close. And she actually, she texted me this week and she goes, why haven't I been on your podcast?
Ah!
I'm like, I thought about it, but
write
I was
a, book.
A little nervous.
You said to her, write a book. What's no, her stage name?
Her name is her name. She was born with a pretty
a nice
easy
name.
Name to remember, Karen Pittman. But she's on Broadway. She did a play called Disgraced on Broadway.
I saw that.
She was in it. She was the African-American woman.
Oh, really?
She was, I'm trying to remember some of the other, Josh... On Broadway, Josh, I'm trying to remember his last name, Radner was her partner in that.
Good. So one of you is real working full time.
No. Yeah. Sheila, the truth is even a Broadway actor, I should say.
I couldn't do that.
Well,
it's impossible. I've been working for 35 years for the same place.
I love that idea.
And I'm still grateful when I get a check every other week.
I understand.
Oh my God, I could never be freelance. I could never be freelance.
I didn't plan it. I just sort of...
I know, but it's horrible. It's horrible to not know where your next dollar is coming from. I can't stand it. I love having money. I can't tell you how great it is. It's so great. I wanted to buy the guy's medallion yesterday to make his life easier.
That's funny.
It's very tough. The city is tough to
make. It is tough, yeah.
So if you're on Kickstarter, what are you asking people to invest in?
Good question. It is...
This is actually my podcast.
It is. I'm handing it over to Sheila Nevins,
host
of FilmWax Radio now. Essentially... I am a champion of independent film. That's what I've been doing for over 10 years. I mean, since I left the music industry.
Right.
And a big part of that is the podcast. It's my way of reaching people and bringing people on to talk about what they do. See, normally I'm not interviewed at Nick Planet. So now it's about even being more effective at doing that. So I can even be more effective in championing the films and getting on board with certain films in a more official capacity. But it's also to build a real studio. It's to have real equipment. I need to have real equipment. I need to be able to hire help, at least getting started.
So is it posted now? Is it posted on Kickstarter?
I'm doing it literally in the... I just got the pitch video back from my filmmaker friend who shot it.
What are you calling it?
Well, it's just like FilmWax. I think FilmWax Radio 2.0 was my idea because it's also... The Kickstarter is a platform for me to say I am now... You know, officially doing the following things, and we're going to grow and be much more effective as a champion. So I'm going to actually things I already do, but I just sort of do them on the slide.
So you're going to make yourself a business executive with FilmWax podcasts or radio,
being
just part of it,
right?
Okay,
right. It's stuff that I'm already been doing, but it's like me announcing now,
putting it all together,
putting the shingle out, and putting it all together because
sounds like a Sondheim song.
And charging for stuff, you know,
charging to listen.
For instance, one thing that people have been asking me to do for a long time is they always were asking me, can you come and moderate the Q&A and this
oh,
and
I
that.
See.
So
I see.
It's that's a very small example, but I've always been doing it, and then I'm like. People say, how much do you charge? I'm like, oh, wait, that's right. I should be. I actually offer something that other people can't.
Did you grow up with money?
Yeah.
That's why. See, if you didn't grow up with money, you'd want it now. You would never have gone this far without it.
Well, when I say I grew up with money, we're still pretty middle class. But you didn't worry about
paying the rent.
No, nothing.
You didn't
nothing.
Worry about
never.
A new tie.
Never.
You didn't worry about school or shoes.
No.
That's why you are who you are.
Sure. And I was also never, it was never really taught either, like how you make it work. Like I fell into a number of things.
Really, it's so interesting. So, I think whatever.
So I'm late. I'm a little bit of a late bloomer in this regard. But I have, you know.
Well, you know, you have a child, so that makes you see want. So now you want on his behalf, really, because you.
Well, I want to take care of him, of course. And I want to take
Who has custody of him?
Well, my ex-wife, but I'm with him all the time. I mean, it's a, you know, that's a legal document, but in practice.
Did she leave you? You left her.
I got to bring her on today. let me get her on the phone. I'm going to put her on speaker. Well, I pushed her out. Let's put it that way. But she left me. Yeah. But I pushed her out.
I had a husband once.
I know.
I mean, I have a husband now. But my first husband changed the lock on the door. What do you think? There was a message in that?
Well, if you can read between the lines.
No, but the thing is, I had a ring from his family that was inside that door, and I was going to get in there and get it so I could get money for it. See, because I was a have-not. You were a haver.
No, I...
Not a have. You weren't rich. I'm not saying that, but I really didn't have money.
I got you.
So,
no, no. Like, it was a time... What year was that, roughly?
60... I got out of Yale, 63, 65. Probably 60... Close to 66.
Okay. So women still had no financial control in a relationship at all. Still, yeah.
I got... You know how much I got for the ring? I mean, I got the super to break the door.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. You know how much I got for the ring?
I have absolutely no idea.
$250. And his mother told me there was a rare diamond that had been in the family for years, and it was a great honor to give me this ring. And she didn't give me the ring. She gave me the diamond. I then paid about $500 for the gold that the ring was in. And then when I brought it in to a...
appraiser?
No, I mean, I thought it was worth a lot because she told me it was worth a lot.
Right.
You know, kind of Mayflower-y. And it was worth $250. But the gold that I had bought myself...
Was worth more.
Was worth more.
And in 1966...
It was chipped. It was a chipped diamond.
Okay.
Like a chipped relationship. You know?
Very...
It was symbolic. Did you want to talk to me or was I just...
I do want to talk to you.
Okay,
no,
then,
I do.
Go.
But you are sharing stuff that's not even in the book. I got like bonus chapters. I feel like, you know... See, I read.
It'll cost you.
Oh, dear. See, I'm not as astute a business. I should have had a contract here.
You should have had your cash register here. Or your wallet.
My wallet, yeah. Well, yes, I did read the book. And I felt like I knew you a little bit from seeing you at public, you know, speak, because you're consistently who you are. I mean, I don't know how to really articulate it any better except to say, what you see is what you get, is my sense about you.
I think that's true.
You know, and the book is just an extension of that. So I wasn't really so surprised. I had already heard about the book, and I had heard about I saw an interview with you and Charlie Rose, which I thought was really entertaining. And then you end up talking about one of the best anecdotes from the book, which was about this wasp you dated and... or were in a relationship with, actually, your first love, maybe, and the mother that you dodged like a bullet, right? And that subsequently, though, you say your success was motivated. You were always motivated, by proving to her and showing her up.
For a long time, I saw her. Isn't that horrible?
Yes and no.
I mean, I actually saw her many times.
Uh-huh. Subsequently?
And I can see her when I talk to her.
Or you used to see her in here.
I see her in my head. I don't see her. She's long dead, I hope. Well, I shouldn't say I hope. But
he
she
said
would
it.
Statistically be long dead.
Right.
You know, I didn't think anyone could hurt me like she did.
Mm.
And I really, I'd never been hurt so badly as that. Because when you trust and you're hurt, it's different than when you're hurt. Someone says to me, "You look horrible today. What do I care?" They didn't tell me I looked good yesterday. If they say you look good yesterday and then the next day they say you look horrible, you feel badly because you mean you didn't come up to yesterday. But I had no yesterday's hurts. Mm-hmm. I mean, little, you know, certainly wounded mother, you know, not a lot of money, no money really. But I'd never been insulted as a self, as a whole person. I'd never had someone reject me for something that I couldn't do anything about. You know, like if you don't like my hair, I'll go get it blown dry. But if you don't like myself, there's nothing I can do. She didn't like myself, my whole self.
Right.
And I wanted to punch her in the head.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a while to want to punch her in the head. You know when someone says something, you don't hear it?
Yes.
You don't hear. She said, "Aren't there any interesting..." Okay, good-looking guy, madly in love. 9 months of dating and loving and listening to beautiful music and going to movies and daydreaming. Not marriage, but... magic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the house of this person. You don't want a wedding ring or any of that shit, but you want forever, or at least a little bit of forever. And you go to a house, and you're drying dishes, and the woman says to you, "Are there any interesting Jewish men in the school?" And you think, "Oh, God, I must be Jewish. My mother's a communist, but I'm Jewish. Yes, I know I'm Jewish." And then she says, basically... "Fuck off. You're Jewish. And you never see the guy again." That's really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That's revenge. That's like, "Listen, lady, you know, maybe I don't have what you have. Maybe I'm not in that blue book. Maybe I don't belong to those clubs. Maybe I never even heard of those clubs. But I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there, and you're not going to stop me. And so very often, not my whole life. I mean, I wasn't motivated. I mean, I'm an old lady now. I don't really think that way, or I don't really think about it. But if I try to summon her up, I can actually see her, which is really weird, because if I try to summon up my mother, I can't really see her.
Really?
I can't see her. She's too wounded, and I see a hospital bed and hands tied to the side, and, you know, so she wouldn't pull out plugs and things. I don't see her. I see the bandages in the bed. But when I try to summon up this woman, I see her. I see her. And maybe that's, you know, maybe I'm crazy, but I see her. But she was not a motivator for my entire life. I mean, this happened 50 years ago. She was a stimulus for the revenge that I felt like, I'll show you, you know, I'll show him. I'll be well known. I don't know what I'll do. Maybe I'll be a stripper, but you're going to hear me. You're going to hear from me. And one day I'm going to tell this story. And that's just sort of how it happened.
I just really appreciate that. Well, there are things that you're not supposed to say in polite company. And one of those things is you're not supposed to say something like, my career is based on revenge. I mean, I know this was a kind of like a soundbite-ish kind of thing. It's to get people's attention. And then, and then you have the opportunity to explain what you mean, like you just did.
Right.
And it's a truth, because most people, you know, do respond from things like that.
From hurt. But you want to rectify us.
Yeah.
It's like putting a Band-Aid on a wound. You could say that the pain motivated you getting the Band-Aid.
And it sounds great,
you
know?
And then you healed. If you hadn't put the peroxide on and the Band-Aid, it might never have healed.
It'd be an infection for
it would be,
to take the...
And you would die, and you would get that disease, whatever, MRSA, whatever, they cut off your legs and your arms. I don't know. I had to stop it, and the only way to stop the hurt was to be vengeful.
Right.
So,
well, to
you
succeed.
Know,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't wake up this morning vengeful. I woke up tired and thinking what I had to do and looking forward to doing this and worrying if I could fit in the whole day. But I didn't think about her. I thought about, was the film we did about Sandra Bland good enough? Were there too many questions? You know, I didn't wake up thinking about her. I woke up thinking about making something excellent.
Yeah.
So did she kick me at the start gate? Yes.
Well, at a certain point.
Did she run with me through every race? Absolutely not.
Well, at a certain point. If you did, can always wake up that way, then she has won, because you're still so preoccupied.
No,
I understand.
I am grateful to her.
Right.
Because I don't know that I would have had the motivation to push so many doors down, but I think that she would, let's say, yes, I wanted attention. Revenge was a good word. I didn't want to stab her in the chest.
Right, no, I understand.
Or did I?
Yeah, or did you? The irony, of course, is that it had nothing to do with you. I mean, of course it did, but it doesn't, because she just was a bigot. And so the hate and ignorance that was part of who she was had nothing to do with you. Had she gotten to know you, she would have, well, she missed an opportunity, of course.
No, maybe not. But I mean, anti-Semitism is very deep.
Yeah.
And as I have grown to understand hate, especially today, I see it as virulent. I hear it, and I see it, and I feel it, and it's, you know, I mean, it goes way back. I mean, I'd like to be Jewish. I'd like to try, although my mother kind of ruined that for me. But I think that anti-Semitism is very hurtful. I heard somebody say something last week that was so unbelievable that I couldn't believe that someone actually said it to me. They said, so if you weren't at HBO, what would you do? Open a store? I said, I don't know. Maybe I'd open a store. And they said, yeah. And then you probably what did they say? You probably charge 3 times as much as anybody else. And I thought, you know, do I say something or do I just move on?
See, the reaction time got much shorter than your response as a
that's true.
17 but or 18
I'm
year old.
But I'm not finished with this woman who said that, because I'm going to have lunch with her and remind her that she said it, and I'm going to ask her if she meant what I think she meant.
Yeah. So you're going to be you're going to confront her and then give her an opportunity.
I'm going to engage her in a conversation to see if maybe I misheard
right.
the intent
I understand.
Of what was probably most clearly an anti-Semitic remark.
Yeah.
I had a neighbor who once said, there's a great tail sag down the block in the country. This was in the country. And I said, oh, I hate tag sales. She said, come on, you can Jew them down. See? That hurt?
Yeah. No, I get it.
I said, I'm not good at that. I usually pay more than something's worth, Charlotte, but I'll go with you.
Should I bleep out the name?
No.
That wasn't the real name. It's interesting. I was dating, I guess, a new woman I was seeing a few years ago, recently,
yeah.
Not Jewish, and which is, you know, more common than not, as it turns out. And she wanted to take me to, I was taking her to an event at MoMA. And then she said, well, let me take you to the hotel around the corner and we'll stay the night there. And so I said, oh, okay, sure. Yeah. And then we were checking out the next morning and I actually got the bill. And I was looking at it as we were leaving and I said, didn't you quoted me a certain amount? And it looks like it's another 25, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, yeah, that's right. You're Jewish.
See?
It wasn't malicious. It's
no,
you know, because I knew she really was into me. It's just that it's just...
The neighbor wasn't malicious, and the woman who said this other thing you charged three times.
It's ignorant.
It was not malicious. It was part of the vocabulary of thought, if thought can have a vocabulary. It was part of the thinking process of fundamental anti-Semitism, which is really rampant. You know, and it's really interesting. It was the 20th anniversary. I'm sounding like a rabbi right now. But anyway, I just feel this because last week I went to the 20th anniversary of the Museum of Jewish Heritage.
On 17th Street?
No, the one that's way down the village. Way down near...
Got it. Yeah.
Where's the Bowery Park?
Is it...
No, Battery Park.
Okay, yeah.
Way down there.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, if you haven't been.
No.
They have a great Eichmann. You've got to go.
Okay.
You've got to go.
All right.
You want to do an exhibit that's like a book?
Uh-huh.
Do the Eichmann exhibit.
Okay.
It's really extraordinary. Because the man who arrested Eichmann is a hologram there. I mean, it's like so fabulous.
Wow.
It's really brilliant.
Okay.
But anyway, so I went because we have a film that I want to screen down there and I wanted to make nice. I didn't know I would be affected in any personal way. And someone got up and talked about Charlottesville and the Nazi flag and the fact that they had lost their grandparents at Auschwitz. And seeing the Nazi flag, their heart actually stopped beating, seeing that that was part of a First Amendment right to carry the bullet, so to speak, that had stimulated the death of her grandparents. Was like yelling fire in a burning building. And so you thought to yourself, she thought to herself, and I thought to myself, you know, is that freedom of speech or is that a bullet if it makes you have that memory of annihilation and genocide? But it was just, you know, it was just interesting that in America we would have that display of such incredible anti-Semitic. It was frightening.
Yeah.
Frightening.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, you want to talk about film?
Yeah, I do. But I wanted to also just let people know that
that's
your
sweet.
Book, You Don't Look Your Age and Other Fairy Tales, is currently available everywhere books are sold. Or anywhere.
Anywhere.
Anywhere books are sold.
Anyway, everywhere.
Is there an audio version? And did you do the...
Read who's in the audio version.
Oh, right. Yeah. I don't know any of these people, but they sound real nice.
Go ahead. Read
it. All right. I'll just start with... Well, I don't know. I think I'm going to start backwards because Diane von Furstenberg at Gloria Vanderbilt. Jesus Christ. Not Jesus Christ, actually. He's the only one missing from the list. Lily Tomlin, who I love. I've always loved her and... Met her one time. It was very exciting. Marlo
Kathy
Thomas.
Burns, Meryl Streep.
Meryl.
Alan
Gloria
Alda.
Steinem, all the icons.
Alan
Alda.
Burstyn.
Yeah.
They all read, and I called them all on the phone.
Lena Dunham. So there's people under 40, 50 or whatever. Katie Couric. Everybody's on here. Edie Falco, who we love. Diane. Just unbelievable. So you can get that also. Makes for a good gift.
Yeah, it's a good mommy gift.
It's a great mommy gift.
Or a grandma gift. Yeah. But you know, it never got really reviewed. Why is that?
What do you mean?
Nobody reviewed my book.
You didn't get a book review book? Review?
I've been a New Yorker my whole life.
Right.
I never got New York Magazine. I never got New Yorker. Well, I never got New York Times.
What did Flatiron Books say to you when you asked them about that? Because I know you did.
Well, you mean when I cried to them about it?
When you were
my
New York Times
review. They said we send out all our books for review and they didn't pick yours. But I did very well anyway. Because I'm a prostitute.
Wow.
I prostituted my book everywhere. I called everybody I knew. I got everybody I know to read it. And I got every person I knew in media to interview me, whether it was Charlie or, mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, you were on all the, you were on the
news
shows.
I went on The Talk. I went on Whoopi. I went on, I did everything. I just called every person and said,
What about the O word?
What's the O word?
Oprah.
I wrote to her. She never wrote back.
But you have been on. Oh, you have it on?
Nope.
Okay.
You want to get me on?
You have to justify that. Yeah, I'll get you on.
When the paperback comes out. No, she never answered. Oh, some people never answered. The most surprising people never answered.
Yeah, there seems to be no
particular rhyme or reason.
I mean,
Meryl Streep answered. I don't even know her very well. I put the book on her desk with a note, and I got a letter at HBO, a little tiny letter in an envelope that said M. Streep and some address, and I thought, well, I didn't think that was her. I don't know why M. Streep is not Meryl Streep, because I wasn't expecting a response, and it was maybe a month later. And it said, I love your book. That's not the actual words, but something to that effect. I want to read The Wrong Kind of Hot, the story about your mother, when, where, XOXO Meryl. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a talk of the town? Wasn't that something in New York Magazine? Wouldn't that have helped the sales of the book?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Shonda.
On the New York Times. Grandma would say.
Yes, right.
No, I think maybe some men don't like me, men in high places. I'm very foot in the mouth.
Still, it's...
It deserved an acknowledgement.
Didn't,
it didn't deserve a love affair. It's not Romeo and Juliet, you know, but it certainly deserved recognition. There was Vanity Fair. There were, you know, I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
I don't care anymore because I know.
Yeah.
That you can find friends in strange places. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. How did that mouse get out of that hole? It's so tiny because it has no bones. I don't know. It was very hurtful, though. But I'm over that because I did it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I really pushed, not to sell, but to be realized. I mean, it was to be real. I worked on something. It had a hardcover. I never did it before. I've been busting my ass for 35 years. It's interesting in itself that I wrote it. Why did I write it? Why?
Yeah.
Why? Ask me why.
Why did you write this book at this time? I have my own theories, but, well, I don't have it really know what was.
Why do you think I did?
Well, I can say I know what the book is getting. I feel like I have a sense of what the book is getting to. For those who think that it's some sort of book about how she made a success in the business, it's not about that. Or the origin story, it's not really that. I think it's all of the parts of your personality that have made Sheila Nevins who Sheila Nevins turned out to be, in a sense, like all these different, it's not maybe all of them, but it's all the ones in the book seem to be that's made you who you are, these different experiences that you've had, and you're sharing them.
I think I don't really know exactly why I wrote the book. First of all, I was asked by, I had written some blog stuff on a website called Wow Oh Wow that didn't particularly succeed as a short story, what's new, older women, you know, blog, but became kind of a commercial blog for products and stuff like that. And so we don't write for it anymore. But the stuff that I had written for it was relatively successful. And there was this woman named Joni Evans who brought an agent to me from William Morris who said, would you write this book? And I thought, no. And then, of course, I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought, what? Why did I say no? Of course I would do it. I don't need, it's not money. It's just refreshing to try something different. It's like if someone asked me to sing opera, I think I would say I can't. Or if someone asked me to do a lot of things, I'd say I can't. But I thought I could. So I did. But I think I wrote it to separate myself from HBO. I think that I was so wedded to HBO that I would meet people and say, oh, Sheila, yeah, you're at HBO. And I didn't like that. I wanted to just be a name of a person. I didn't want to be at HBO. I wanted to work there, but I didn't want to be identified with it so strongly. So this was like separate. There's nothing in there about HBO.
Zero.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And there's the people that I work for are alphabetized. They're not in the front of the book. There's no obeisance. Is that how you say that word? Obeisance?
Obeisance? I don't know.
Is this such a word? I make up words. There's no curtsying
right
to people who wrote me checks over these years. I decided to put only in the front of the book my husband, my son, and the people who had read the book for me, and the people who had made the book possible for me. Technical people, assistants, not the hierarchy. And I think it cost me by not acknowledging in a grandiose fashion important names, but putting them in alphabetically. I think that was the ultimate in chutzpah. Correct and costly. Correct and costly, two C's.
What, you mean socially?
No, I mean visibility. I think I would have been helped more by if I had acknowledged them I couldn't have done this without them.
Made a hierarchical kind of
But I could
acknowledgements.
But I could have done it without them. I could not have done it with Rob, the guy who basically showed me how to do it technically, or Stephanie, who showed me how to get on Word. I didn't know a fucking thing about Word. Or Chance, who let me leave early and, you know, got the phone. I think that I would not have been able to do it with those people. I don't think that the hierarchy liked it, made it possible, or I would venture to say, read it.
They're just reading the acknowledgments.
I think that's true.
Like they're they do their first email is the Google alerts, right? With their name, I suppose.
You know, that's why I like that movie Mother that nobody likes.
I saw it last night or two nights
you
ago.
Did you
watched
like
it. I paid for a movie as my friend that I went with a documentary filmmaker. As a matter of fact, I did like it. I thought it's pure allegory.
Yes,
it's pure entertainment.
It's like Gothic allegory.
It dares you.
It's like Chaucer or something. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant. Yeah.
Dante, Chaucer, exactly.
Dante, Chaucer. Yeah. It wasn't contemporary. It was mythology.
Yeah.
But it was the mythology for the creative and the need to destroy and take the heart out of someone to get your idea and to eat a baby. Eat that baby, no matter how hard it was for that person to be there and make that baby. I thought it was genius.
And who else would do that?
Nobody.
And it's
but
so
he might
of its
never
time.
Do it again if it doesn't make a lot of money.
Well, I think
like
he knows that.
I think he knows Aronofsky.
Yeah, I don't think he...
A sweet little boy from Brooklyn.
I'm not sure what he thinks. I would love to get him on here and talk about it.
I
would love to, you know...
I would love to tell him how much I love it.
Well, you could. This is your podcast, as we've already established.
I met him somewhere. And I told him that I went to Barnard. Yeah, I met him at... I met him. Okay. Before this.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably find him again. We could do it together with you.
Yeah, or just you're. Well, we've established you're taking the podcast over, didn't we, early on?
Oh, no, I forgot to tell you that.
Yeah. No, we said
that.
But
wait a second. All right, no money. Sure. I told you in the beginning that I needed the money.
Well, here's the true reason I came is I'm going to try to get HBO Docs to sponsor my...
I'm not really HBO Docs. I'm an employee of HBO.
I know you are. No, and I would never.
If I was HBO Docs, it would be different. I make documentaries at HBO.
I know you do.
But I'm not HBO Docs.
And this book is not about HBO Docs,
not
too.
In
we
the
do
slightest.
Establish that. So buy the book. Do yourself a big favor, and you'll enjoy it, as I did. So
tell
and
me
now
one
we
more
can,
time
yes.
about your Kickstarter so I can get on it.
Oh.
I'm very wealthy, you know.
Am I flush? A flush here? Yeah. So
I warned you. I've never been ordinary. I've learned to keep my mouth shut.
As I said, I have a wonderful track record. And because I've been doing this podcast, I have on big shots. I have on...
What am I? A medium shot? You can tell
you're a big shot. No, you're a big shot.
No, I don't think so. Well, I think in New York, I'm a big shot. I think I'm a medium to low shot.
Oh, I see what you mean. No, but a lot of the people that listen to my show, you're a big shot.
Oh, to them, yeah.
Yeah.
Are they big shots or little medium shots?
Oh, the whole gamut, I think.
So they're alphabetized.
They're alphabetized.
They're
yeah,
not in
I
the front of the book necessarily.
I don't. Yeah, that's exactly right. I should have said something when you said that because I relate. I maybe
to alphabetizing.
Yeah, maybe I would if I wasn't an alphabetizer. Maybe I would also have had be a little further ahead than I am. But you know what I'm doing, I believe in. I believe in what I do enough to continue doing it, and that is that I don't draw a distinction. If you make good art, I want to talk to you. If you have something to say, I want to talk to you.
Well, go get Darren Aronofsky.
I want to. And, there are just layers and layers of people. And one of the big frustrating...
Timothy Greenfield Sanders. You know who he is? He's a photographer.
Uh-huh.
That's where I met him, at a party at Timothy Greenfield.
Well,
so I would do that as an operative.
You know, the thing is when...
Are you aggressive?
I'm politely persistent. I'm not aggressive. I'm
impolitely persistent. It's got me into trouble.
Right. But I get people like I got you on because I didn't.
Oh, but that's, I'm not a me. I told you I'm a me.
Well, I had no idea. No. Well, people said to me, Sheldon Evans will do your podcast. I'm like, okay. Yeah, for years I've been meaning to bring you on, but this is the perfect
time.
Darren
is a little boy from Brooklyn.
Well, here's the thing.
He needs
so you have,
to love this
but he
movie.
Hires, but he hired a publicist, and the publicist is there to not really is to protect him from doing a podcast that doesn't have 50,000 listeners.
But that's not correct. That's not right.
I agree.
He's an independent filmmaker.
I agree.
He started as an independent filmmaker.
And that's still in the heart of what he's doing. Clearly, this was not made for
the
masses.
He needs your audience.
Yeah.
He needs those couple of thousand people. A couple of thousand people is fine. And a couple of more thousand is fine. But somebody has to defend the film because the film is an allegory, as you said.
Yeah.
It makes me weep, that film, because my heart has been torn out. No one's eaten my baby, but I know people who would have.
Wow.
Don't you?
I don't know. We're pretty protective, as you are. I mean, it's clearly... I wanted to say, I was kind of turning to a new topic, but I do want to go back for one second and mention this other chapter, which was very moving, because it's not just it's not supposed to be all, I don't know, it's not like a flip book. It's not, although you can flip through it, but I'm not going to tell. And that is this chapter about your son and just
Tourette's
and just being so, you know, open about it.
You know, we're going to read it at the Tourette's Association together, David and I.
Uh-huh.
We're going to get up on the stage, and he's going to read David. Rosie read it on the audio tape, and David and I are going to read it at the Tourette Association Gala, which is sometime in November. I should know. I should plug it, but I don't know how to plug. But I think that... he's come a long way, and I think he's on the board of Tourette's, and I think that he will mean a lot to those young people that will be there to see that he can read himself as a little boy and be a grown-up now and not be ticking all over the place or doing things, you know. So as much as I hate pharma, I love it too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I understand that. I understand that conflict. It's a beautiful passage, though. And, you know, having a son and my son doesn't have Tourette's, but everybody can relate to wanting to protect your son.
Yes. Wounded.
And then being forced that you can't, there's only so much you can do. Yes, there's pharmaceuticals, but you can't take away the Tourette's.
No.
You know.
And you can't take away the ADHD and you can't take away the bullying
and you can't take away the
fact that someone you love is not the same as everyone else and therefore is not going to have it as easy as someone who might have it easier, that it's going to be harder.
Right.
It's very hard. And if it's your child, that's why maybe that Darren Aronofsky movie was so incredibly powerful to me, because she had to lose what she treasured the most in order to make him successful. Terrible. Terrible. terrible.
And I just looked to the... Well, first of all, I wanted to mention, since we're talking about Mother, how you know that Darren Aronofsky sat down with Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem, right? And they had to have had this conversation.
They had to
He says to them, this is going to piss off everybody.
Yes.
This isn't going to be... Like, a lot of people are going to hate this movie. He's had to have had this conversation. We're going to really disturb a lot of people. Are you in it with me? You know, and they had to have the number one star. She's the big, right, the highest paid maybe now. Emma Stone is. I don't know, but no problem.
But she did a brilliant acting job.
Yeah, no, that's the best thing I've ever seen her do, I think.
Hello? Hello? Yes, Paul. Well, I'm in the middle of this, but go ahead, sweetheart. Is everything okay? Oh, your sweetheart. Is it evening, Saturday? Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. Bye-bye, darling. I'll call you in a few minutes. Bye-bye. Boy. I have to see Ellen Burstyn, who read one of my stories. She's in, I shouldn't say have to, I want to see her in, there's another water over there for you.
Yeah. No,
in As You Like It, which is at the...
Just hold this a little closer.
So. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
So we're the same.
Anyway, Ellen Burstyn is in As You Like It at... And it was in the Hamptons, and I hate the Hamptons. So I didn't see her there. But I didn't realize it had gone to the Classic Stage Repertory on 14th Street, I think, or 13th Street.
There's a couple of theaters right on 13th Street.
Yeah, 13th
between
Street.
3rd and
13th
4th.
Street. 13th, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember.
Or 3rd
remember.
And 2nd. Yeah.
But anyway, I just got the tickets because it was sold out.
I love
so
her.
I tried to get
I love
tickets.
Her so
You
much.
Love her?
I love
Come
her
with
person.
Us to see it.
Don't tease me, because I really do love Ellen Burstyn.
Oh, please. Would you come on Saturday night with me and my husband if I can get a third ticket? I don't want to embarrass you in front of
you're me. You're not? No, of course I will. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you don't
if you mean it.
You don't know how lovable she is.
I can only imagine. I've been
her.
In love with
I
her
just
since.
Called I... Her. I just called her and asked her to read my story, and we became friends. She read the one about Jeremy, the kid who dies of an overdose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You've
I got to get
hear
the audio.
The audio. Yeah. God
I
damn.
Promise. All right. If you.
I'm going to send you the audio.
I'm not going to do this as quid pro quo. I was going to say, if you take me to the play, I'll listen to that. I'll get it this week.
No.
But then
you
that's
can
not
have
fair.
Both from me. I'll give you both. I'll give you the audio.
All right.
And I'll see if Paul can get it. I can't promise that we
I know.
Can get a ticket.
No, I know.
It was all
of course
that.
Not. So, I bet.
I can't promise that it'll be a good ticket, but I can promise I can get you a
well,
ticket.
I do love her. Because when I was a kid, my introduction, well, it probably was Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I was even so little because,
she loves
you know,
me.
And
so
and good. Then when I was like a very, like a teenager and I went to see, speaking of Alan Alda, same yeah. time next year, the movie.
Alan read a story.
I know. That's why I mentioned him.
Yeah.
And I've seen him on the streets, but I'm like waiting. And then every time she comes into New York, I try to... You know, figure it out. It's very hard, though.
Oh, but
so,
she's the best, and
I know.
She now lives in New York. But Alan Alda,
well,
I just had his email, and I hadn't worked with him in years, and I wrote to him, and I didn't hear from him. And then he wrote, and he said, I want to read Mary 1 and Mary 2.
Uh-huh.
Mary 1 is the one that has all the breaks, and Mary 2 has nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary 1 gets the job, Mary 2 doesn't, Mary 1 plays golf. Excited that she got her job. Mary 2 works in the golf shop. They both wanted the same job. And Mary 1 swears when she sells... Mary 2 swears when she sells Mary 1 the visor. And Mary 1 says, charge it to my father. Mary 2 mm-hmm. vows that she's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she's Mary 2.
Right.
The bad one. One is
it makes sense.
Mary
those.
1 is an evil. Mary 1 is just connected. But right. Alan Alda, who had all the breaks, wanted to read that story.
Oh, Robert Alda, his dad, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
you know, it's funny.
Robert Alda, Alan Alda. I mean, I think it's his nephew, cousin, uncle. But the point is he didn't have to go the hard way. But he chose that story. It was weird. He identified so strongly with it.
Well,
he's such a good guy.
He's always comes off that way. I mean, I'm sure he is. For my generation, it wasn't MASH where we discovered Alan Alda, but Free to Be You and Me, which, of course, Marlo Thomas
Marlo
was the...
Marlo read one, too.
I know. I keep
Marlo
plugging.
And I and are at the... We're going to talk about being old at the Museum of Television and Radio.
That's called the Paley Center, I think.
I know what I call the museum.
The guy I went to see Mother with, his name is Michael Rosato Bennett, and he did a film a couple of years ago, which was not on HBO, but it was called Alive Inside. And he was, from that came a program of giving people with dementia headphones that have a built-in memory or you know, like a chip in it, right, where you can load music. And they were giving them to these dormant people who had withdrawn into themselves, you know. And yeah, in a way, they just were responding. I mean, they didn't like get better. It wasn't like that extreme, but they, all of a sudden, people that were barely able to lift their heads were listening to music, specifically music that they loved from their past. And they were, yeah. And some people really responded. You should see this documentary. And it won Sundance that year for a documentary, like two or three Sundances ago. Alive Inside. So I gave it to my mother. I had the guy on, and now we're friends because, you know, over time, not so good. Not so good.
Does she know you?
Well, what happens is you see her, and then she'll look at you, and then she recognizes me. But that's it.
Adultery one is the one they're most interested in, the one on the train.
Oh, yeah. Is it the one where the two women, you're overhearing the two women? Yeah, we're back on. The two women, and then one leaves.
Every group I have ever read it to.
It's a great story, though.
Every single group. Now, I made one mistake in doing the audio. Audra McDonald read the entire story. That was stupid. I should have had two people.
Sure, yes. Yeah,
it was really a mistake. So what happens at these, whatever you call them, is I had two people read them.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time that happened, it was a women in film thing. And the second time that happened, it was a thing at HBO. And the third time was Friday at Time Warner. It evokes the most extraordinary discussions. So one of the discussions about two women on a train,
mm-hmm. Oh, right.
One sleeping with the other's husband.
Right. But we don't know that. You just, yeah.
We don't know that right away. We just know that they've gone shopping and that they don't have much sex with their husbands and that they, you know, they've been married for a long time. Their husbands were kind of lab guys, you know, professors and lab guys, and they work in laboratories and invent things, science guys. And they work at New Haven. They get offers from Stanford. But they're highbrow women who've gone shopping. College women, maybe even advanced degree women. And the author, myself, overhears them on the train talking about life, sex. Then one goes off to get
one
coffee.
One goes to the car, right,
car to get coffee for
and,
both of them.
Right, and then
the other one
gets on their phone.
And calls the other one's husband and says some very sweet, loving things about how your wife and you don't have sex with her, do you? And I'll see you tomorrow. Poopsie, coopsie, whoopsie. Okay. So it's a fine story. It took 5 minutes to write it. And it wasn't based on any, well, maybe yes, maybe no. But nonetheless, it was an interesting story. But I didn't by any means think that people would hook into it, especially women. But I was so surprised. I have not ever not had a response to that story. So what have the responses been? Okay, two women on a train talking about their husbands who they don't really have sex with much or whatever, married a long time, educated, one having an affair with the other's husband. Okay, number one, a lot of people felt that the one who went to get coffee for the other one, always knew that she was having an affair with her husband. How did she know? How do they know that? Because she didn't get the sweet and low. She deliberately didn't get her the sweet and low. She deliberately bought her half of what she wanted. She wanted coffee with cream, and she said, "I'm a something in contradictions. I'm a, you know,
yeah,
woman of contradictions." They took that to be, "Don't trust me." Or they took the absence of sweet and low to be don't trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Then came the discussion of when men have affairs, do they still stay with their wives or do they leave for the other woman? Well, that created in one group an enormous discussion about how men never leave their wives unless there is another woman already. Men are too chicken shit to leave without them.
Before the marriage begins, you mean that they
before the adultery. Other words, they have an adulterous affair, and then if the woman is young enough and spicy enough, they leave their older wife. But they don't ever just say to their wife, "I'm leaving you." They always leave for another woman. because they don't really want to live by themselves.
It's their
rite of passage. They can't go from one to the other. Then the other conversation came about God, which is really a little odd for me, but it was about you marry someone and you stay with them, and even if you do fall in love with someone else in the process, you still must stay with them as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And as a religious man, you would stay. So that was another kind of conversation mm-hmm. that happened. Then came the conversation that women cheat too. So why did I do the men that cheat? Why wasn't it two men where, you know... So it has created all kinds of conversations from highly liberated women to highly religious women to what I believed in some cases, possibly adulterous women, to a possibly also and clearly women who know their husbands are cheating. So out of nowhere, the story that I thought would have no umpapa had the most interesting umpapa in terms of discussions.
Right, right, right.
I wanted people to ask me about my son or about my mother or about, you know, rules for the workplace that I give you. I mean, I expected an entirely different kind of emphasis.
Well, it's the sexiest story, not meaning sexy because of somebody's half-dressed, but because it has that, a bit of the, not tabloid, just it.
Yeah, tabloid. It, I like that word.
You know what I mean? Though it has, but my point is I interpreted it as a friend cheating on another friend.
That's a man's looking at it. I haven't really talked that much to men.
Well, if it was two guys, I would have had the same experience. Like if they were talking about how they weren't having sex with their wives,
and then
one gets up and goes to the bathroom, and the other one calls, you know, the wife.
A different attitude?
I don't think so. I would have still thought, oh, it's a friend cheating on his friend. Like that's the cheating. Because that's how it's sort of set up, too.
It's interesting. It never occurred to me that it would be two men. It always occurred to me that it would be two
men.
Well,
it's interesting because women, the relationship
women
between
women are very sensitive to that story.
Well, I imagine because, first of all, I imagine women feel like they have, that in order to fight a lot of the misogyny out there, that to also give the impression that they cheat on, that a female friend could cheat on another female friend with her husband is the lowest you could go.
Yes,
So to put that out there, I would imagine that the women would have been the most offended, if anyone's offended, because you can't write about that. That makes us look like we're...
Oh, interesting. No, I haven't had that reaction.
Interesting. That's good. But
I'll tell you something interesting. I only read the negative comments on Amazon about my book.
All there were.
No, they write positive 51%. The book doesn't have that high rating, but that's because I don't ever tell anyone to write anything. I was told to tell friends to write, but I didn't.
Well, I'm going to tell people because that's my job.
Good. Okay, fine. But the thing is, I couldn't do it because it was embarrassing to me to be so demoralizing.
And
but I was advised that the way you do this is you tell, you know, your college roommates, and you call all your friends, and you look down your Rolodex, and you say, please write something good on Amazon. Please write something in Goodread. Please, please, please. But I didn't do it. Not because I'm such a moral person, because I wouldn't know what people thought. And because this wasn't my...
Yeah.
It sort of wasn't my day job, if that makes sense. Anyway, so I let it just happen. So I have like 165 comments, which is pretty good, of which I'd say they're divided equally between negative and positive. I don't read the positive ones because I know that they like it.
Yeah.
What I like to do is like to read what people don't like. Now, some are vicious. Some are so mean that they are, you know, I have a really good psychiatrist. But, I mean, some of them I've brought to my shrink because mm-hmm. they've said things like, she's so narcissistic. She just cares about the way she looks. You know, and
she's
boring.
She's honest the way she looks.
I read one or two stories and I threw the book out. Why did I ever order this book? Uh-huh. You know, I mean, I read the negative ones and I check maybe once a week. I mean, I'm not obsessive about it, but I like to read the new people who hate me. Only once did I answer someone. Only once I was told never respond. But I do look at who they are. So, I mean, it shows you how I'm wasting my life, what's left of it, on this nonsense. I'll hit it to see that, you know, a week before they reviewed on Amazon razor blades or a chainsaw or a shoe or a sneaker. So, I know that the people who don't like me are also writing reviews about other things.
They don't have much else to do with their free
time. No, they have nothing to do, and this gives them a chance. Right, yeah. But one I had to respond to.
Which one was that?
It was the one who said, I read one or two stories and threw it away. I said, you do not have a right to review my book unless you read the entire book. You must read the entire book from cover to cover.
Did they respond?
And then, no, they never responded.
Yeah. Well, when you shine the light.
Oh, some of them are so mean.
Yeah,
though.
No.
They insult that, like everything. You say, and then they say I'm selfish.
Why? What? My approach is, you know, nothing nice to say, don't say it. But if you're going to be, or if you're going to offer criticism, make it constructive. I mean, at the very least.
Or
otherwise,
read the whole
they're just.
Book.
Well, certainly read the book.
But then I like to know what else they've read.
I just want to,
one of them is like a yoga. She said, oh, I don't like the book. It's so boring. It never made me laugh or cry.
All right.
And
well,
then I, you know, I saw she
read
was
it.
Like into spiritual yoga things. And, you know, I'm not a very spiritual yoga kind of person. So, you know, I figured, okay, you don't like my book. So I didn't feel so badly. But when they say really horrid things, then I get really upset.
Yeah.
Really upset. I wish her book was as good as her documentaries. That's bad.
It's backhanded. I mean, they're giving you some passive-aggressive compliment. I wanted to share with the one thing that reminded me of when you talked about, when we were talking about the dynamics between, about how people also find out about it. My dad was, my memories growing up, my dad was home every day after work. It was very conventional that way, that he was, but when my marriage was failing, you know, I don't know how much to divulge here, but.
If I'm divulging, you should divulge.
It's true.
It's mutual
divulge. So my marriage was failing.
Do you think if you wrote a book called Mutual Divulge, anyone would know what it was about?
No, it's just vague enough where people would be interested.
Could be the story of a podcast.
yeah. or marriage. Well, my unhappiness in my failing marriage, I made some poor choices, let's put it that way. Nothing extreme, but bad still. And my wife said, you should go and talk to your father about this. And so, you know, my dad came to my office, actually. We sat and we talked, and I asked him, I said, did you ever, in all your years, my parents have been married 60-some years, and I said, did you ever, I mean, it would be normal to have feelings for somebody else or to...
What do you say?
He then went on, and I believe I said to everybody, I said to my wife, I said, there's no way. I'm not like naive, and I'm not like a wallflower, but I
naive my, question.
My dad.
Yeah.
My dad, he's like, was home every night. My dad was like
so what a
devoted
what
family
he
man. He could never have done that. Right. He would never. It's not my father. I mean, almost anybody else, I believe. And he just went on to tell me about a number of women that he had feelings
what an
for.
Honest man.
And he said,
I love him.
Fell in love and he considered, like, there was a period when I was 15.
Isn't that great?
That
great?
Yes, it was.
You see how
that
great?
He loves
will
me enough.
Is that you're telling me?
No.
Or are you going
to
edit it out?
No, I'm not going to edit
well, your
it out.
Won't know
no,
anyway.
I love my dad and he stayed with my mother and he takes care of her.
You see, that's what one of the women said on Friday, which is that it doesn't matter if a man has an affair.
He didn't have the affairs, though. He would have told
me.
He may have not. I don't know how far. Well, that's true
matter,
too. But if you're going to spill,
to fall in love is. To
I said
have
no.
Affair.
I think I asked him, and I
he's
but,
not going to tell you you're his son.
Okay. The point is that the anecdote,
and
it's a very fast anecdote.
Your mother
anecdote.
Is wounded, so to tell.
No, this was way before. This
no,
was,
but she's wounded now.
Oh yeah.
So therefore, he can't tell you because it's cruel to tell you now.
Oh, I couldn't ask.
And
him
maybe
now. I wouldn't
in
go
some
back
way,
there.
The man who takes the best care of his wife.
Yeah.
In something like this. In Alzheimer's predicaments has to because he has a kind of guilt for other things. I'm not accusing him of anything.
I know.
I'm just
know.
Saying
right.
he's not going to
tell
you.
I understand what you mean. Right. I wouldn't go broach it again anyway. But the thing is he breached, I broached.
You can't be in the workplace and not fall in love.
Here's how my mom always found my. But everybody finds out, right? Yeah. Because most people give it away. Most guys or whoever is doing the transgressing.
Well, you can smell it on their clothes.
There's all sorts of ways they let you find out.
Right. If they're going to stay, they let you find
out. Oh, right.
If they're going to go.
That's a very good point.
They don't because that affects how much money they get.
Okay. My dad had over this person who he worked with, this woman, with her husband for dinner at my parents'. And at one point during the fun evening they were having, my dad reached over and took a piece of food off of her plate after the evening ended and they went home, my mother says, "What's going on?"
Oh, brilliant.
She picked up on it. She could see it because that was such an intimate act to take food off of somebody's plate, right?
It's brilliant. Yeah. It's a great short story.
It's Cheever meets Updike meets
you. Updike meets me meets a little bit of Aronofsky. Only because
he's with us today, isn't
eating.
He, Darren Aronofsky?
Well, eating, you know, just like they eat the babies in there. He's eating is a visceral, mm-hmm. sexual, sensual act, and taking it off her plate in front of both her husband and his wife.
This unconscious thing
is
that he
did. Unconscious togetherness that is really, I mean, he's ingesting it.
Yeah.
So
I thought you'd appreciate that anecdote.
No, I don't appreciate it. I think it's genius. I think it's a genius story because a genius of your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because would I have thought that? Yes.
Well, you have to take dad into account, too. I don't know, the husband and the relationship, the type of... people that will take food off of anybody's plate once...
No, but not in your own home. In a restaurant, people tend to taste each other's food.
Right, interesting.
In someone's home, it's an invasion of a certain kind of privacy. It's your mother's plates. It's your... They bought the table together.
Yeah.
He changed the light bulb
that
morning.
This is where they raise their children.
Yeah,
this is where
the sink. Yeah. She reported the sink dripping and the thing to the super. Super didn't come. He called and told the super to come right up. There is a togetherness in a house that is the invasion of that kind of thing is much more telling than it would
interesting.
Be somewhere else.
See, Sheila, let me ask you then this next question. Did my mother wait till after the guests left because she's just a class act or because she was too... She wouldn't have had a confront. What do you think? I don't know.
Say it again. Would your mother?
Well, she didn't say anything until after they left. And my question was, I wonder if she did that because she couldn't feel like she could confront people there or because she's just so too classy to do it.
Too classy.
Well, that's the right answer, but I wonder.
No,
I
wouldn't give you the right. I don't believe in right answers. Mm-hmm. I believe in the answer.
Okay.
I think she was too classy to offend anyone.
Mm-hmm. Again, in their home, right? In a restaurant.
A restaurant is different.
It's different.
Oh, you have his? He's supposed to be a great chef when it comes to snails. Can I try? Oh, yeah, let me try. That's different.
Well, I also, in terms of confronting, like if you're sitting at a table and you pick up a sign that your partner might have transgressed with somebody else at the table.
You might think it was bad manners in a restaurant. At home, it's a transgression.
Yeah.
Different.
But
I like your mother. I'm sorry she's suffering this.
Thank you.
So, well, I can't accuse your father of anything. I don't know him, but that's a very intimate act.
Yeah. Again, it goes to this thing
He's
of
a very well-mannered man. He lived on 10th Street and Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, he misses it every day, too. You know.
Why did he move back to Queens? They wanted the money for the
sale. They needed... It was like the height of them. They were never going to... Well, he had retired already, and they were looking at...
Such a beautiful block.
Oh, my God. He loved it there.
They make a lot of money on it?
Sure.
He doesn't work anymore. He's too old.
Oh, he hasn't worked in... He retired early because he got laid off. He was downsized during the whole period of downsizing.
So
and he was still in his 50s.
What did he do every day? I know.
I'm coming up
you
to
know,
the age.
I had a guy drive me to Connecticut. He was also fired from Ford and 54 years old. Been out of work for X number of years.
You go to your money guy and you figure out how to make it work for the rest of your life. So
that's why you had to sell the house.
Well, that was part of the...
You have sisters and brothers?
I have a sister.
What does she do?
She works in the school system. She's
a good person, like your mother.
Yeah, my sister is a very good person.
Did your mother work?
Sporadically. I think I got her gene. They met in art school, and they were both graphic artists. No, I wish. I do have it, but it's not in the same sphere. She was could paint, draw, sculpt.
Where are they?
Photograph, everything was.
So where are they? Where's the art?
Oh, it's there. They have it at home. Yeah, she was never ambitious. It was for herself.
Different generation.
But she could cook like an artist. She was
All the more reason.
She's just does everything.
So that was a meal that she had prepared.
Yeah, well, that's right. She people would come over. We had family, like cousins would want to move in, and did, because, you know, they just were so taken care of.
When she saw that.
I think, they worked it out. But there was, I remember a period of time when there was a very strained period in my parents' relationship. My mother sequestered herself emotionally for a period of time. I was a teenager. I didn't know how to deal with it. And they, by the way, all my childhood, individual therapy, group therapy, this came up. It's not like they didn't deal with it. And they got through it, you know. And,
well, they you probably know. Got through it for your sake.
Maybe, I don't know. It could have been that they loved each other. I mean,
well, love has, you know, levels of definition.
Sure, and it wanes and it waxes.
And it waxes, and it,
yeah,
and it's,
you know.
But you can't help, you work in the workplace, you fall in love. I see it all the time around me.
Sure,
people.
Of course.
You know.
Of course. You have a building full of people in their 30s and 40s and 50s. And
you're 60 or 50 and 60 and they're 20 and 30 and they're lonely and they have no place to go at night and, you know.
Yeah.
Office romances are quite complex. And quite
prevalent. 10 years in,
and quite prevalent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I was 10 years. I met my wife at Sony Music, so I remember.
How do we get off on this?
I don't know.
That's bad.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about HBO. We didn't talk about documentaries. Oh, you no. I'm well. You tell me if I need to edit.
You don't have to edit anything.
We edited a segment in the middle.
That was different. That was a personal, interpersonal.
Sure, sure, of course.
There's nothing that I ever say that I sort of regret.
Good.
Because I wouldn't say it.
And I do divulge. I do come out. I mean,
and
it's
I
part of what
censor.
I do here.
I mean,
yeah.
Like the little girl in the story who, you know, says that some of her best ideas come from not being able to censor. If you censor everything and you don't tell it like it is, then how are you going to have an idea? I wonder, really.
Mm-hmm.
Ideas come from free thinking, free thoughts. You get yourself into trouble sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the real trouble is pancreatic cancer or getting hit by a bus or a terrorist. Lunch!
Yeah.
You know, this doorbell has 13 different things, and it decides which bell to ring. That's get up. It's, you know, you will be late.
It also has jingle bells. Oh, okay, because I thought that was...
It also has coming.
We're talking about the film. This is the film
portion. I think I would be closer to reality TV.
Yeah.
And what I really love, then I would be to something as brilliant as, you know, 12 hours on Vietnam. I appreciate and respect it, but I believe...
Or Ken Burns, or...
Yeah. I know. I believe the 1% is watching.
I get. I know what you mean. I understand exactly.
I have this
right.
Desire.
You want people to see the documentary.
I want to do Taxi Cab Confessions and Real Sex and Class Divide, which is about the park between the Avenue School, which is $50,000 a year, and the Elliott Housing Projects, which is on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do those stories.
That's a great.
But those are the stories that I like. I'm not interested in celebrity particularly, although I certainly respect it because I can imagine the price, especially having seen the Aronofsky movie. But I really like people who need to be seen, not people who have already been seen, if that makes sense.
Sure. But I also hear you say, it's interesting because I mentioned Doug, and yet you say you don't like documentaries with voiceovers. When it's a crutch, I assume you mean, because...
Well, no, I don't like voiceovers that are narrative, objective narrator voiceovers.
Oh, so firsthand.
I adore when someone tells their own story.
Okay. I was trying to
I don't think
reconcile.
I've ever made that clear. I don't like when you hire someone and then they read you the story.
And they're telling you,
someone says, and then when my mother fell down the stairs, she was never the same again. I want that person. Whose mother fell down the stairs. I don't want someone to tell me that then his mother fell down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it now. I'm glad because I was wondering how to...
No, I have no problem with narrative because I think and I don't mean narrative film, but
narration.
I have no problem with narration provided subjective narration. I don't like objective narration.
Right.
Drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. I also don't like walking and talking shots.
Oh, okay.
Because people don't walk and talk.
Well, they do now.
Not really.
On their phones.
Oh, that's different, talking to them. You know,
No, I know,
but I mean,
course.
I don't
I know
like when someone is talking to no one and walking and telling you.
Those scenes, in, there's always on the Law and Order when they're getting the hot dogs at the food cart and they're walking, talking about, and it's all exposition and it's all
I know. And it's
just
like,
a shortcut.
I don't like that. And I don't like driving, although I love taxi cab confessions. I don't like when people are driving and, there's voiceover and they're driving or, you know, I don't like any of that. I don't know. I just say, take that out. Take that out. Take it out.
It's an overused.
Not real. Take it
so
out.
It's an overused.
No. I think people sit and talk.
Mm-hmm.
They just do.
Yeah.
That's the natural thing to do. And the docu should be natural. But I'm not a purist like Wiseman. And
right.
I'm not.
Or Maisels. Or...
No, although I loved Al. The greatest shot in any film I've ever worked on was Al Maisel's when he did
let me guess,
the abortion film. No,
what?
It was called it was about a young boy dying. It was called,
was this for HBO?
Letting Go. Say yes. Many years ago, Susan Fromke and he made this film about this little boy who was dying at home. He hadn't seen his mother in a long time. He had some horrible degenerative disease. And Al stayed with him over the night that he died. And he wouldn't leave. Neither would Susan. They didn't check into Holiday Inn and say, call me in the morning. I mean, that's a really extraordinary kind of filmmaking. But my most favorite shot, which is not that, that's my most favorite stick-to-itiveness.
Right.
Of the Verite filmmakers of classic origin. But the other one was, we did this film on abortion many, many years ago. And this couple can't afford to have the child, and they're leaving. They're not married. Maybe they were married. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
They're leaving, and the elevator in that clinic is not bigger than that couch.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe 4 feet by 6 feet. You know, it's a small box of an elevator. And she's just had her abortion. She comes out of the clinic. Her boyfriend is waiting, her husband. They go into the elevator, and Al goes with them, which was then a rather large camera. And all I could think of was, because I knew the size of the elevator, I'd been in it. And he shoots the two of them, and they don't know he's there. They don't know anyone's there. And he's there, this little elfin genius with this big camera is in the corner of this tiny elevator. And he shoots it, and it's a very sweet scene. The young man looks at the woman looks at the young man, and she puts her head very softly on his shoulder. It's so beautiful. It's so perfect. Mm. And I said to him, you were in that elevator with those people after she just had an abortion? He said, yeah. I said, you were actually in there? Did they know you were there? He said, no. I mean, that's true verite, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was genius. There's nothing comparable to that. Nothing. The other favorite I have is in How to Die in Oregon. This was not them. I can't remember who the cameraman was. I should. Someone comes to administer.
They have euthanasia as legal in Oregon, right?
Yeah, it's legal in Oregon. One of the first states. Mm-hmm. The first state. Then I think it was Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think it might be Colorado. I don't know what it is.
Makes sense.
But anyway, this woman who is in her 50s is dying of liver cancer, Cody. And she has her hair done the day before. And her stomach is all bloated. She has tons of fluid tons of it taken out of her stomach. Gives all her clothes away on camera, you know, to her friends. Mm-hmm. The doctor arrives. The family is around. It's snowing outside. The cameraman does not go in the house. He shoots through the window. You see the snow. The doctor comes in, greatest docu-line ever, and she says to the dying woman and her family, I'm sorry I'm late. And she's about to administer the medicine that will let Cody go away forever. Mm. I think that's just incredible. No one could write that line. No one could write that line. No one in the world. and no one could sneak into that elevator. So those are the great, great moments.
And these are the moments of why so many people have responded to documentaries, you know, as a
But the form is very much celebrity now. It's difficult to make a docu like Class Divide and have it watched. And it's just difficult.
Yeah.
Except at Sundance or in the aficionado villas of the sort of educated halls of reality.
I know this one's on another platform, not HBO, but Yancey Ford's Strong Island, very, very moving.
Which one?
Strong Island, which is Yancey Ford's.
I don't know it. Tell me what it is.
He is an African American because he identifies as a male. And when he was a teenager, living in Long Island, his brother was killed he's the African American family living in Central Islip, Long Island, which was like a little bit of a African American.
Why was he killed?
Because of the racist that killed him. He went there to. He was confronting because his car was in a chop shop and they were ripping him off. Anyway, so he went there to get the car, and he was shot. And they said they were afraid of him, and they didn't even get past the grand jury. So nobody was ever arrested, anything. Anyway, but Yancey, and then what the toll it took on the family. It's all about her story. It just premiered on Netflix. And it's also, I think, at the IFC Center. I may be wrong about that, but it's in this place. It's also having a select theatrical. Right. Anyway, it's an incredible story. Yancey did this podcast because I know him.
Janet Mock. Mm-hmm. Also, not identifies, but became a woman.
Well, now,
she has a book.
To transition doesn't necessarily even mean making any physical modifications at all. It could just be that you self-identify.
To me, though.
It is.
It's
a fluid thing, and I don't know if Yancey will make any changes in that regard or not. I mean, it's a personal choice.
We have a film called Quinceaneros on a 15-year-old who was a boy who has a quinceaneros as a 15-year-old.
What?
He has a quinceaneros as a 15-year-old girl. But he has breasts. He just still has his dick.
I see. Oh, okay.
A girl.
Yeah.
So he has his quinceaneros.
I've had to just sort of reboot my entire trying
it's
to figure
tough. It's a tough thought.
Sexuality is fluid though, and it is whatever now someone says they are is what they are, and regardless of how you look at them, what they look like, it's the packaging is no longer the identity, you know.
Interesting.
See, we have a show here. Think about it. All right. Trying to sell myself.
Timothy Sanders did the trans show, the trans list, he called it. And Janet was in it. That's where I met Janet.
Oh, I see.
And that's how I got Janet to read one of my stories. And Carrie Fisher was supposed to read those stories. Mm. Carrie died.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's a tragic thing unto itself after all this wonderful changes in our life. But then her mother just goes like a week later or something, it? It was just shocking. Like,
did you see her film, Bright Lights, with Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds?
I haven't seen that yet. I want to see that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that on HBO?
It's on demand.
Can I watch it? Yeah. I have HBO Go or whatever.
You have it? Yeah, you could watch
it. Oh, good. I don't know how I missed it so far.
It's a wonderful documentary.
Even though it's a celebrity documentary. But
yes, but it's not about celebrity. It's about a mother and a daughter.
Mother and a daughter. Yeah.
Who don't know that a year later they're both going to be dead.
Well, yeah.
So it's valuable in the very nature of its serendipity.
Yeah.
If Carrie knew. Carrie didn't know. I loved Carrie.
Mm-hmm. She's like one of those people that, you know, you just feel, oh, God, I would love to had a sit down for a...
Yeah, but I had.
Yeah, I know.
I loved her. She was complicated. She was brilliant. She was ill.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so sane.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to be ill to be really sane. mentally
yeah,
ill.
Or go through that.
She was special.
Yeah. Well, you know, and thankfully she came out as, you
know. Bipolar.
Yeah, I mean, she broke down a lot of barriers that way, or at least the
But shock treatment was working for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know enough about it, but I know she stopped. But it seemed to be working. She seemed to be able to do her Broadway show, Wishful Drinking. She did it
right.
Every night, and she still was getting shot. I don't know. I'm not in a position to talk about. I don't really know the answers.
Yeah.
Except that I spoke to her a week before she died, and she was okay. And I saw her in London. She died December, between Christmas and New Year's of last year. God, she hasn't even been dead a year. And I was there the preceding April or March when she was doing a final voiceover for Star Wars. She was okay. She was a little high, but she was good. She was alive.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't dying. And then she died.
As you said, it's, it's must be the toughest part of getting older is just people, everybody
but
dying.
Carrie was only
60. I know.
60.
No, of course. Of course.
Carrie was 60.
I went to a memorial service for a 57-year-old this weekend.
Where'd they die?
Complications. They had a number of problems, and they just sort of all manifested, got to a point. And so it's unclear to me exactly what it was, but I know she had pulmonary issues and some organ failure thing. So it was just... Yeah, somebody who was like an editor at Harper's Magazine and who was very big in the literary world. We've been talking a lot today about publishing world and literary world. And this is person who edited David Foster Wallace and all these other wonderful.
She just died.
Yeah, she was. It wasn't sudden, but it was, you know.
Well, like, I think we're built to you know. Disintegrate. So I guess the time at which you disintegrate. That plant is older than that. Wait. That
we
plant
have a,
is older than that plant, but that plant is dying, and that plant
Sheila's
is
office is surrounded by orchids, actually.
I like
beautiful.
Orchids.
Yeah, well, they're beautiful.
But I think the thing is, that one should have died before that one.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you explain it? They've got the same amount of light. I guess it's the genes. I don't know. Listen, we could both get out, go walk out and get hit by a bus, right? And then what?
Then you don't
I'm
get
not
your
on
then
dying
you don't
for
get
while.
No 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 you're
so if
you're in great
on
shape.
Publishing this, you have a long wait.
No, you are in great shape, and
not really, but I'm okay.
You have a rash. We'll take care of that. Uh huh.
But there's Gloria, who's 5 years older than I am.
Yeah.
She walked here from her house. She lives in 70s in Madison mm-hmm. or whatever.
Uh huh.
So who knows? Who knows?
Listen, and
one minute later, I didn't have this rash on my neck yesterday.
Then you won't have it there.
I know, but it
probably by tomorrow.
I got a big rash all over my neck.
We'll take care of it, and you'll find out.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is, in one day, life can change. In one day, you can lose someone you love. In one day, you can find someone to love. It's all magic, serendipity. No God.
But Harry Dean Stanton, 91. So there, that's like wonderful.
That's okay,
that's fantastic.
Pretty good. That's pretty good,
right?
Yeah, I like when it says natural causes. I don't like when it says cancer.
Yeah. That's right. Somebody asked me, what does Harry Dean Stanton die of? When he died of being 91. You know, that's. But, my mom, my dad is 81, and he shows no signs of.
Does he go out
great.
Every day?
He goes out. He does their food shop when he comes back. Every time he leaves, he feels like he's got to rush back to be with my mother, even though there is an aide with her.
Who dresses her and showers her.
She takes such good care of my mother. The unsung heroes, right, that we don't pay for. Yeah. Our teachers and our home health aides and our nurses
and
all the important people.
Our
medallions.
And sometimes our policemen.
Yeah. When they're behaving.
Is there anything else you want to ask?
No. No. You've been...
Did you want to
incredible.
Ask you, are you going to sell my book?
Yeah, we're going to sell your book. Of course, we're
my
going to sell lots of copies.
You
don't
quickly.
Look your age.
You know, you look at that Amazon thing, it's really terrifying. All these bookstores, they can't sell books because it's cheaper on Amazon. So these little bookstores
yeah.
are
Oh, yeah, no,
out of
course. I just, it's horrible.
Oh.
Yeah, well, there it is. Yeah. All right, let's say goodbye. We'll do a part two sometime in the future when you have another book or... Because we didn't talk about documentaries. We touched on it, and I know what you love and what... See, even just describing those... No, but now I know. Hold on. We're going to say goodbye.
You know me, you know my documents.
No, that's right. And supposedly she's been involved or make over 1,000 documentaries.
Oh,
that's
way
not
more
possible.
Than 1,000.
Wait, I said over. Okay, somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000. And also, apparently, from what I'm told, has won more Emmys, speaking of which, because they were on last night, which was going to be my way in, but we got started kibitzing, so I didn't go by any planned structure here. But you've won more Emmys than any other nonfiction?
I don't know if that's true anymore.
It's gotta
You'd
be.
Have to check.
Peabody's. And,
well, you know, the Peabody's, they won't release it, but I think I have.
All right.
I mean, he
these things don't matter, really, but it's nice.
Yes, they matter.
I'm trying to be... You
no,
know,
I mean, they don't matter
if I
really.
Said it.
You know what? They don't matter really, but let me just tell you something. Because documentaries are so unknown or
right.
were so
yes.
unknown,
yes.
they matter. They were yeah. pedigree. They don't matter so much anymore.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, here we're at. You've, you
I've
know.
Been doing this for 30. I've been at yeah. HBO for 35 years. That's
okay.
probably older than you are.
I'm way older than that, but
okay,
thank
but
you.
But anyway, 35 years.
It's great
years,
to know.
I've been working there for 35 years. For 35 years, I haven't been bored. Well, for 34 years and 9 months, I haven't been bored.
Okay. Well, things
We'll do
come.
Part two docus
yeah.
sometime next
okay.
year.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
When How's that?
Yeah, because then you can...
Then I can expand my
be,
universe.
It'll be a new, interesting perspective. Exactly, without saying anything. Thank you. This has been 1,000 times better than I thought it would.
You did?
This is
what
wonderful.
What do you think I'd be, what, difficult?
No. I knew you'd be great. Engaged, yeah. like I could tell when you, like I knew you're one of those people that once
I'm
you're
engaged.
Committing to do it, you're going to be completely there, and that's yeah. all I'm at, and that's all I can expect. And then, but to be, you know, to have such great,
I feel like
great...
I've known you a long time.
Me too. I feel that way too.
That's why if you do the DNA test, maybe we're related. It costs about $100. I don't know what it costs. You take a swab.
Yeah, yeah,
your
yeah, and you mail it in, and
you
they tell
mail
you
it
you're...
to these people who are probably completely crazy. I'll show it. You want to see it?
Yeah,
I'll show it to you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you. I love my interview.
Me too.